Welcome to the PapaCast on the links. Now here's your host, Bob Papa.
And we welcome you to the PapaCast. So glad you can join us. And golf is the subject of today's PapaCast. And what better guest to have than a member of 9 Ryder Cup teams, a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, and my partner on the Champions Tour on Golf Channel, the incomparable Lanny Watkins. Lanny, how are you today?
I'm good, Bob. Great to be with you. Miss seeing you, man. I'm looking forward to us getting started again in January.
Yeah, can't wait to get started. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But Ryder Cup is sort of the central figure here. And obviously, Lanny, your career as far as the Ryder Cup is spectacular. Not only were you the captain in 1995, but you played on 8 teams. Your record was impeccable. The third best record and points of any player in the history of the U.S. The United States has struggled in Ryder Cup play. What are some of the things about Davis Love III as being the captain here for the second time that the Team USA can change in order for them to be more competitive against the European side?
Well, you know, it really comes down to just playing well, Bob. I mean, I think they can be prepared, and being prepared would be knowing the golf course. Fortunately, they're playing over here this time at Hazeltine National in Minneapolis, and we've held numerous majors there. So a lot of these guys have played it. Some of the young guys may not have, so it's going to be important they get up and look at the course ahead of time. You know, I think sometimes these guys need to swallow their pride a little bit and not worry about so much who their partners are in these matches. You know, Davis was inclined last time to pair guys that like to play together, and he was actually very successful going to the singles. And, you know, at that stage, you know, they should have won having a 4-point lead going to singles. There's no reason not to, other than guys just didn't take care of business. But, you know, being prepared, I mean, I played on 8 teams. I never once asked a captain to play with somebody. You know, the captain's job is to figure out who goes well together, who's going to win points, and, you know, take it from there. I think the thing that you try and do as captains have maybe 2 groups in each session that you feel like there's no way they can lose. So that means the worst you're going to do in each session would be a break even. So I think that's worth looking at. You know, you try and do that. And I was a part of that. I mean, Dave Stockton put Hale Irwin and I out first at Kiowa in 91. And, I mean, you know, Hale and I, if nothing else, we were going to mean some people to death. So no way we were going to lose. And I think that's the attitude you've got to take.
Lanny, obviously, 21.5 points you recorded in Ryder Cup play. So you had a knack for winning. Do American golfers, have they lost the art of what match play is all about?
I think that's a good point, Bob. Most of the kids, and I've got 2 boys, if you know, that just got through playing college golf, and they grew up playing medal play. I grew up playing match play. Every tournament I played in as a kid was match play, and usually 2 matches a day. So the object was to beat your opponent in the morning as soon as possible so you'd have plenty of rest for the afternoon match, who in most cases would be a tougher opponent. So I think you've got to, you know, it almost becomes a tournament within a tournament. And, you know, you have to be a little bit more focused on taking care of business. You can play a little bit more aggressive in match play because if you hit a really poor shot, it's just one hole. It's not going to cost you a tournament. You can always rebound from one hole. So there's definitely a mindset. I know in 1979, I played with Larry Nelson. Billy Casper put he and I together in all 4 matches, and Larry had never played match play in his life. And he said, what do we do here in match play? I said, Larry, it's very simple. I said, you win holes until you're more up than there are holes left. So you get 1 up, you want to be 2. You get 2, you want to be 3. You know, sometimes in medal play, you get 3 or 4 under. You play conservative and pick up a birdie here or there going down the stretch. In match play, it's I want to win every single hole, and you try as hard as you can to do that. And when it's going your way, you can eliminate people pretty quickly.
Lanny, did you ever think that we would come to the point, I mean, where Tiger Woods is happy to be an assistant captain for the Ryder Cup?
No, I didn't. But, you know, I totally understand the back stuff, Bob. I've had 6 back surgeries myself. I'm double fused, so I know a little bit about what he's going through. And, you know, back injuries are just – they're horrible to try and come back and play golf from. It's just going to take time. I think he's still young enough and good enough shape. I really believe he will come back and win tournaments on tour. Whether he wins majors or not, I don't know. But he's got a lot of want to in him. He's got a lot of desire. He's tough as nails when it comes to golf tournaments. This might be a nice little downturn for him, for, you know, let kind of regroup. And I also think that the more he stays away from the game right now, the more he gets the bad habits out of his swing. He can look at old films. He can come back positive. And, you know, some of the things that he did when he was with Hank Haney, it takes years to get some of that out of your swing, because he wanted to get away from that entirely. And so I think, given the time, it's really going to help him long term.
You know, I know the Ryder Cup was so important as far as the fabric of your career and representing the United States. I think it does illustrate the one thing, Lanny, doesn't it? I mean, here's a guy that was the most dominant player of his era and arguably one of the greatest players to ever play the sport. Yet he's all in at being an assistant, which illustrates just how important the Ryder Cup means to players from the United States.
Oh, there's no question. I think if there was one thing shocking about Tiger Woods' Ryder Cup career is that he has a losing record, as does Phil Mickelson and Jim Furyk. If you take any of those guys and give them a winning record, we'd have won another three Ryder Cups at least. So, I mean, when I go back to the, you know, to the task force and all the stuff that they worried about, well, sometimes your studs have to take care of business. You know, my generation, we had me and Curtis Strange and Hale Irwin and Tom Watson all with winning records, and we were the guys that played on the most teams in that stretch. Tiger loves the Ryder Cup. He loves match play. You know, I'm at a loss to understand why he hasn't had a better match play record or a better Ryder Cup record than he does, because he is so competitive. He does not want to lose, and I think this is his way, you know, of trying to give back and trying to see. You know, he understands that somewhere down the road he's going to be captain, maybe captain at least a couple of times. So, you know, he's going to watch and learn. It's a good time for him to do that. He's probably not going to make the team as a player. So to be involved with it and see what goes on and learn the players, the young players, even better than he already knows them, because he's going to miss a year, it looks like, of playing with them. So this gives him a chance to be around him and see, and I think it will improve our Ryder Cup chances going forward by him being an assistant captain this year.
You know, Lanny, you know, you think about Tiger Woods and you think about, you know, what he did, you know, winning the U.S. Amateur and the match play, so it doesn't sort of match up to what his scores have been in the Ryder Cup. But, you know, this task force, I mean, it has come under a lot of scrutiny, and there's a lot of varying opinions on how it was formed, what it's about. Are there too many cooks? There's some changes you'd like to see, though, to how they're going about deciding which are the best players at the time to really represent the United States.
Well, I think the first thing that this, you know, all of a sudden in the last few weeks has become a glaring mistake is not having Ryder Cup points for the fall series. You've had two really talented young players in Justin Thomas and Kevin Kisner win tournaments. Had there been Ryder Cups, you know, points for those wins, they would have jumped in the top 10. And those are two guys you'd love to have on your Ryder Cup team. They're both really competitive. They have a lot of game. They're going to be, you know, really good players for a long time. And to get them involved in a Ryder Cup right now would just, you know, especially Justin Thomas, he's like 22. Kisner's in his early 30s. But Justin Thomas is going to be part of these for a long time. Get him started right now as a youngster. Let him learn what it's all about. I think it would improve it going forward. So, to me, that's a mistake, and I don't know why. I mean, they say these fields are weaker. I don't know that they're that much weaker. I see a whole lot of really great players playing in these tournaments. So, it's you know, that may be a mistake. The other thing that really got my eye when I looked at that Ryder Cup task force, I looked at the players that were on there, and there was like one player included in all the task force that had a winning Ryder Cup record. Now, why wouldn't you go consult people who've been real successful? You know, get a Ben Crenshaw, Paul Azinger, somebody.
How about a Lanny Watkins, man? Well, you have the third most points.
But I mean, get people who know how to win and who've won at, you know, at Ryder Cups, you know, going forward. So it's kind of like golf has become the good old boy network among today's players. They all want to play with their friends, and they don't put team first. And I think you've got to put team first and, you know, play with whoever the captain thinks is going to be the best fit.
if you had to play with a guy that you didn't really particularly care for, which I'm sure you did, what was your mindset going in?
Just to win. I mean, I'd just get this guy, whoever it was. If I had a partner, and unfortunately, I really got along with all the guys I played with. You know, the captains that I played for tended to match guys that played a lot alike. I played a lot with Corey Pavin, with Hale Irwin, Larry Nelson, Payne Stewart. Had a lot of success with those guys, and you know, we stayed aggressive. And I think that's, you know, when Stockton wanted to win the first match at Kiowa, he put, you know, me and Hale off first, and we had Montgomery playing his first one. We beat him, I think, 5-3 or something. When Watson wanted to win the first match at Kiowa the first day, who do I play with first off first day is Corey Pavin. And we beat Bernhard Langer and his partner twice that day. So, I mean, that's, you know, you've got to look at that kind of stuff and that kind of attitude, you know, going forward. I mean, Pavin's another guy that's a captain that wasn't on the task force that's as big a bulldog as you'll ever see.
Lanny, you won 20 times on the PGA Tour, 1977 Pebble Beach. You win the PGA Championship. Also, additional wins as far as, you know, amateur wins, the Ryder Cup, you know, everything that you accomplished in your career. Let's go back to the beginning here. Obviously, you got talent. You got game. But you were always known as a guy that never quit, that just, you know, you stormed your way through. What are some of the things that really planted the seeds for you and your brother Bobby to go on and have successful careers? Because let's face it, you didn't come from a country club background. I mean, you were rolling up your sleeves and going after it.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely blue collar. My dad was a truck driver, so my mom taught school, so there was no silver spoon, you know, aspect of our upbringing in any way, shape, or form. But you touched on something that I think is a big key to my career growing up, and that's my brother Bobby. You know, we're only 18 months apart in age, a year apart in school. We played from day one. We started junior clinics together, and we played other sports, Bob. We played, you know, basketball and baseball especially. Bobby was the captain of the basketball team in high school. And I loved other sports, you know, as you know. But with golf, you know, we had each other every day. And from the time we became 10 or 11 years old, you know, I didn't want to lose my little brother, and all he wanted to do was beat me. So we became ultra-competitive, almost to the, you know, as brothers will do, almost coming to blows a couple of times on the golf course. But I think just that day in, day out, you know, competition really, really helped me a lot. And then when I went to Wake Forest, I had three seniors on the team. Two of them were first-team All-Americans, and one was a second team. So I stepped into an awfully successful college program trying to beat these guys. So, you know, I think the key for any young player coming along is the competition. That's why I recommend whenever you start kids playing, start them in a group setting, not individual. If they're in a group setting in a clinic, if they've got competitive drive, they're going to want to beat all the kids in that group, and that's just going to make everybody better. That's the way Bobby and I started. That's the way I started my boys playing.
Lanny, you know, you come into the pro game, and, you know, Jack Nicklaus is in his prime. Talk about that group that you came in with, that rookie group, because that's as talented a group coming out of Q school as any group.
Yeah, we had a great group. We had a guy that works with you and me, John Mahaffey, who was an NCAA champion and a great player, won a PGA championship and a players. We also had, you know, Hall of Famers Tom Watson, David Graham were in my Q school as well. There were 23 people that came out of that Q school. And when you look at the majors and tournaments won, that school has accomplished more in the fall, from the fall of 71 as any school that's gone forward. So we were very competitive. That school had three U.S. amateur champions make it through that school, Bruce Fleischer, Steve Melnick, and myself, you know, as well as a bunch of other really, really qualified players, guys that won on tour named Alan Miller, Sam Adams, Leonard Thompson was in that school. So it was a very, very deep quality school, and we jumped right in the middle of Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, all these guys, you know, that were the big names, the George Archers, the Bob Golbies, even Sam Snead was still playing the tour on a regular basis when we came out. So, you know, we got to see and were exposed to a lot of really, really great players.
You win the Sahara Invitational in 72. You pick up the Byron Nelson and the USI Classic in 73. So you got some wins right under your belt right out of the way. Did you know right away that you were going to stick and stick in a big way?
I thought so, yeah. I had played really well in college. I had the fortune, you know, I was fortunate enough to play quite a few pro events, you know, when I was at Wake Forest. I was actually runner-up in the Heritage Classic at Hilton Head, starting right at the beginning of my junior year. After I'd won the amateur, I finished second to Bob Golby in that tournament, and you know, played my final round that day with Arnold Palmer. I finished 13th in the U.S. Open in 1971 as the amateur champion. So I already had a taste of what the tour was like, and I knew that I could play. And the very first tournament I ever played in, Coach Haddock let us go over and Monday qualify for the Greensboro Open. You know, when we were at Wake Forest, and on Monday qualified and played as a freshman and made the cut. So I had success early on the tour, and I think the key factor for me, Bob, is I wasn't afraid of them. You know, I thought I could play just as good as these guys. I'd already done it. I'd been paired with Nicklaus and Palmer. I'd seen them play. So, I had a lot of confidence in my ability, and I think that, you know, by playing well early, it just fostered that confidence, and I kept moving forward.
You win the 1977 PGA Championship. Is there any cooler place to win it than Pebble Beach? I mean,
No. I mean, when I look back, I mean, I don't think I could have picked a better place to win a major than Pebble Beach. It was incredible. I mean, there's so many memories and things that come back from that week. One of the biggest was standing on the 18th green after I'd finished, watching Nicklaus stand over a putt from 15 feet to tie me. And I'm thinking, you know, at the time, we thought it was an 18-hole playoff the next day. All majors had been conducted, you know, playoffs had been conducted at 18 holes on Monday. We did not know this was going to be the first major ever decided by sudden death, which it was. But I was sitting there thinking, I really don't want to play Nicklaus on Monday. I wouldn't bother me at all if he missed that putt. And he did, fortunately, then I ended up beating Gene Littler on the third hole of sudden death.
You know, 79, you win three times, including the Players' Championship, which is just awesome. The L.A. Open, which was called the Glen Campbell back then. Lanny, you know, today the guys flying around on corporate jets. You're winning tournaments back then, winning one almost every year between 1979 and 1992. Was it more fun? Did you guys have more fun?
We had a lot of fun. I think that's one reason the Ryder Cups, you know, you always hear right now one of the knocks on our teams is they aren't close, that the Europeans travel together and do stuff. And I'm not sure that's as much the case. I'm sure that, you know, McIlroy and his, compatriots fly around in private jets as well these days. So
plus half of them live in Florida, right?
Yeah, a lot of them live over here in Florida. That's, you know, but we did have a good time. We, you know, it was nothing for Weisskopf now to go share a suite at a hotel somewhere and, you know, have dinners together. We did a lot more of that back then than I think happens now. And we were, you know, we weren't as much into the, you know, fitness, working out and watching our diet, and we might take a drink here or there and have a little fun. So probably a little bit more wide open, I think, the personalities were than they are today. There, you know, everything is, with social media, is so scrutinized. I mean, if one of those guys picked up a drink, it'd probably be on social media in 10 minutes. So, you know, we didn't have that to deal with, so we could let our hair down a little bit more.
You had a lot of interaction with celebrities because, if you remember, you know, for people that maybe you're a little bit younger, in the 70s, you know, a lot of celebrities. I mentioned the Glen Campbell Open, Jackie Gleason, Bing Crosby. I mean, a lot of superstars, you know, put their name on tournaments. It must have been a lot of fun to get to know them and hang with those guys.
I mean, it really was. I mean, I've played with guys like Dean Martin and Sinatra and Bob Hope and, you know, I think two or three different presidents. It's really been cool. We were exposed to a lot. It was a different era. I mean, you know, they were the celebrities. We were just golfers. Today, the golfers are the celebrities sometimes, and maybe that shouldn't be the case. They're just playing a game. But it was always cool to be around the celebrities. And you know, Howard Cosell used to have a day with guys who were former All-Americans in Palm Springs, and every celebrity out there came and played. It was really a cool event, and you know, we got exposed to a lot of that. And the parties were always pretty good too, Bob.
Yeah, I'm sure you enjoyed yourself just a little bit, right?
Every now and then.
Every now and then. Just a little taste. Just a little taste to make it fun. You know, Lanny, was there anybody that was really influential for you that kind of took you under their wing? Or was it so competitive that nobody wanted to give anybody an edge?
You know, I always have to give a shout-out to, believe it or not, Buddy Hackett. Talk about celebrities. I'd met Buddy when I was at Wake Forest. He'd been over to the – he had a weight problem, so he'd go to the diet center at Duke, and we had become friends. He got me an exemption into the Sahara, where I won my first check on tour, which was the second tournament after Q School, and then I won the next year. So Buddy was a big help and a lot of fun to play with, and I actually played with he and Jerry Lewis one time in a celebrity thing at La Costa, and I mean my face hurt from laughing so much, you know, after that was over. But you know, on tour, the two guys that really I thought helped me a lot were Bert Yancey and Tom Weisskopf. I played a lot of golf with them. We played a lot of practice rounds, a lot of money games. Our standard money game was Bert Yancey and I playing Weisskopf and Palmer. And Yancey was always big into what made you a better player. And he would help both Tom and I with our routines and our setups. And he actually taught me how to hit driver off the fairway back about 1973 at the British Open at Troon, and it's a shot that probably won me tournaments going forward. It became a big shot that I had in my bag, and I had to thank Bert for that. So those two guys were close, good friends, and we spent a lot of time together both on and off the course.
All right, I know you love playing golf with your boys, Travis and Tucker, but if I asked Lanny to put together your dream foursome outside of your sons, who would it be?
Oh, wow. That's I'd go back to the guys that I really had a lot of fun playing, you know. I mean, if I could put together Yancey and Weisskopf and Palmer and myself again in our heyday playing, that was as good a time as we could ever have. I mean, the needle went in deep and often, and it was a lot of fun, and it was very competitive. We had a very standard game. It wasn't over the top money-wise, but it was enough to keep you going. And when we were doing those a lot in the early 70s, we all had really good years through that stretch. You know, Weisskopf won, I think, six times in 73, right in the middle of us playing all those games. But I don't know that I ever had a better time. The money games were what I kind of lived for and played for. You know, later on, Raymond Floyd and I started playing Nicklaus and Irwin. I've even kept telegrams that Jack Nicklaus sent me. I've got Irwin. Are you going to show up? Are you and Floyd going to show up? You know, that kind of stuff. Then Watson, I went 5 years and nobody ever beat us. So we had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I think that first group, if I had to put together a foursome, though, Bob, that would be, especially today, to go back and do that again, you know, knowing what I know now and appreciating them as much as I have grown to appreciate them, it would be a blast.
Lanny, I know you love spending time with your sons, and you had a really cool experience, and we saw it on national television as you and your son Tucker win the father-son in a four-way playoff. Talk about what that was like, having your sons with you and finally winning the father-son.
Yeah, it was really cool, Bob. I mean, PNC Bank puts on a wonderful thing, and all the dads have to have won a major championship. So you've got, you know, Nicklaus and Trevino and Faldo and Langer and Lehman, a lot of guys we see on the championship on a regular basis were playing in this thing with their sons, Larry Nelson and Tucker and I played good the first day, got in contention, the Sings were leading, then the second day we just played a nice solid round and I made a nice putt on the last hole about 12 feet. First time I stood over a putt that meant anything in a long, long time, and I was able to make it and got Tucker and I in the four-way playoff, as you mentioned, with Loves and Nelsons. And then finally, who else we had there? We had the Funk, Fred Funk and his son. So then the first playoff, old Tucker had a great drive. We ended up using my second, and he buried a 40-footer for Eagle for us to win. And, you know, the cool thing for me is it wasn't just Tucker there. I had my older boy, Travis, caddying for Tucker, so I'm sitting there with both boys for the weekend, and you know, they're 28 and 23, don't know how many more experiences I'm going to get like this to be with them together. So it was maybe, you know, one of the biggest thrills I've ever had in golf.
Lanny, you had to make an 8-foot birdie putt to get you and your son into that playoff. Talk about what it was like to stand over that putt, and what did you channel at that moment? Obviously, you have a Hall of Fame career, but did you take yourself back in time?
Yeah, a little bit, Bob. I mean, I've always played a little bit off instinct. And the one thing that always helps me in a situation like that is I play pretty fast. So sometimes I don't have time to think about it. I treat it more like a lot of other sports do theirs, and they react to the ball. I'm kind of reacting to the time and what's going on and going through my routine. Obviously, the first thing I was pulling for was Ed Tucker putting first. We were playing a scramble. I wanted him to make it. He'd made almost every one of those all week. Well, he just missed, and you know, now it's down to me, and I'd already looked at the scoreboard, knew I had to make this for us to get in the playoff, and man, I made it dead center. Oh, it's a great feeling to not only make that putt for what it did to get us in the playoff, but turn around and see both your boys sitting there and the looks on their faces that, you know, they're pretty proud of Dad at that point in time, and it's pretty good because they didn't get to see me a lot in my prime. I had my boys late in life, and so it was really, really a cool experience.
Then your son drains the eagle putt on the first sudden death playoff hole. It's got to be really cool to watch your son be able to do something like that and beat such a talented group.
Well, it really was. I mean, you know, Tucker's a very talented young man. He just graduated University of Arizona, played golf, and he has a lot of game. He's not electing to play professionally right now. He kind of wants to go in the business world. So he's been working 5 days a week, and for him to step up and hit the tee shot, I mean, he laid postage on Davis Love off the tee, which was really cool, just right down the middle. And then when we got over the putt, he said, you know, he walked in the green, said, "Dad, I was nervous on the 18th hole." He said, "But now in the playoff, I feel really calm." And I was walking back to have one last look at his putt before he putted. He just looked at me and said, "I got this, Dad." I just said, "Okay, bud, go ahead." So he drained it, and it was in 4 feet short of the hole. I'm starting to jump on him, and it was just maybe one of the coolest experiences of my whole life, Bob. It really was.
And Lanny, obviously, there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of competition. You know, and you're a Hall of Famer. It says something, though. You don't play. You broadcast with me on Golf Channel. You beat guys that play regularly, including, you know, Davis Love, who won on the regular tour, the PGA Tour, this past year, as well as competing on the Champions Tour. Come on, admit it. That feels pretty good, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Bob, I can't know that, but Davis's son, who plays at Alabama in the top five, just played in the PGA Tour event. So, I mean, they're playing a lot of golf, playing very regular. Tucker and I played 37 holes with them. You know, I got paired with them both days, and I, in my mind, Tucker way outplayed Drew. Davis obviously way outplayed me because he's got an immense amount of ability. But, yeah, I hung in there, made a few shots when I needed to. The coolest thing now is, you know, going back to Champions Tour telecast, I played one tournament, I won. It gives me and you a little bit more credibility sitting in the booth there, big boy. So that's going to be exciting. So, you know, when I say something, I'm speaking from even current experience, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, you've built a lot of relationships, you know, from your amateur days, your playing days at Wake Forest, through your PGA Tour career. You win in your Champions Tour debut. I mean, that's also a rarity. Not a lot of guys have done that in the history of the Champions Tour. And you've been an accomplished broadcaster, working for CBS and the Tower at 18 with Jim Nantz, and now with us here at Golf Channel. And, you know, Lanny, relationships are very important. And part of the fun of it is being able to needle your friends, like with a little blue velvet every now and then.
That's right. They get me on the blue velvet, although I did kind of threaten our little short rotund producer that if that ever left the truck, he may not be alive much longer.
Yeah, Kim Jong-il, Brant Packer, our producer at Golf Channel. Yeah, you know, we did these demonstrations, and Lanny, you know, we started playing blue velvet, and you like to dance a little bit, but that's a tape that can never get out there, can it?
No, it better not. No, but it's becoming folklore around Golf Channel, I think, to this day. But you know, I like to have a good time, as you know. So I'm not bashful when it comes to jumping in the middle of something.
You know, our team, our Champions Tour team on Golf Channel, we've got you and I in the Tower at 18. We've got John Mahaffey, a PGA champion in his own right, winning at another storied venue at Oakmont. Billy Ray Brown, who won 3 NCAA championships, including an individual, was a fantastic player before he got hurt. David Marr, you know, team building. You know, you think of golf as an individual sport, but, you know, team building is also really important, and I think that's part of the magic of what we have on television. Talk about the importance of that and the places that you've worked and being part of a team.
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do is you've got to lose your ego a little bit. And I think one of the things that always impressed, you know, surprised me was the amount of egos in television. I feel like we at Golf Channel have kind of checked ours at the door, and we all get along great. We let everybody do their stuff, and we all come at it from different areas. And I know that, you know, John Mahaffey, every time he and I get together in a conversation, you know, one question leads to another sometimes, and we get deeper into what these players do. And you know, John and I like to go ride and look at the course together in the mornings and kind of prepare that way. So it's important. It's important that you trust the people you work with. I mean, and when you talk about teams, I think that's one reason I played so good in Ryder Cups, Bob, is I love the team aspect. I always thought that if I had 3 years of my life to do over again, I'd go back to Wake Forest, and it was mostly because of the camaraderie of playing with my teammates, playing with them on a daily basis, you know, the social aspect of it later, and that's what we have. You know, we work hard together, but we also have a great social life, going to dinner, and then, you know, you get to go out and beat up on people like Rob Sharp at, you know, with golf in the afternoon. So it's a great hang time, and it's something that I wouldn't trade for anything.
All right, so Lanny, you had so many great wins and so much success, but if I had to ask you, what's the most clutch shot you ever had that you pulled off, what would you say it was?
I'd probably have to say the shot at the Ryder Cup in 83 when Nicklaus was captain. I was down to the last hole of my match playing Jose Maria Canizares. I was one down, and it was a par 5, 18th at PGA National. I had to win this hole to tie my match for us to win 14.5, 13.5. And I remember the yardage. It was 72 yards, and I hit it a foot from the hole. And I'd hit that shot with about eight of my teammates and Captain Nicklaus standing about 15 feet to the right of me. You know, all of them telling me, stuff it, you got to win this hole. Well, you know, Canizares was already in place. He wasn't going to make birdie. He was going to make par. And I hit the shot a foot from the hole. I went up on the green. Tom Kite slapped me on the back. And as you know, I'm never at a loss for words, Bob, but I went to say something to him and nothing came out. So it was the most nervous I've ever been. And I've always used that shot going forward, that if I could hit that shot at that place and time, then I can handle any shot I need to going forward. So I kind of put that in the memory bank and used it, you know, going forward. But the cool thing about that, after I hit that shot, I'm walking up to the green, Nicklaus goes over and kisses the divot. So how many people have had Jack Nicklaus kiss their divot? Not many.
Yeah, not many. Not many at all. Usually picking up Jack Nicklaus's divot, I would say.
Yeah, and saving it under glass somewhere.
Yeah, exactly, because you know what? You could sell it, make money.
Yeah.
Lanny, obviously you played with a certain fire and intensity that maybe turned some people off. You were the king of the angry backhand putt. Did your temper get in the way at all and maybe hold you back in some? It's what made you great, but do you look back on it and say, you know what, maybe if I would have been a little bit more under control, I might have won this one or that one, or you don't care?
You know, sometimes it's the impetuousness of youth, Bob, and I think we all have our way to play the game. I mean, Fuzzy Zeller and Lee Trevino couldn't play golf if they had to be quiet. They would explode. That was their release. I had to play intense. Hale Irwin plays very intense. And almost to the, I'm not going to say playing angry, but playing with almost like a chip on your shoulder, like you really want to get it done. And I know that I thought a lot of times I could do whatever it would take to win a golf tournament. So, yeah, I mean, if I had it to go back and do over, I would still want to have the fire, but I want it to be a little gentler version of what I want. And it would probably have to be with TV and microphones and today's social media. I would almost have to be that way, I think. I'd have to refine the way I was, no question. But I do think that, you know, one of the greatest ones that I always got criticized for was I backhanded a putt on the ninth hole at Augusta. And there's a story behind that, and the story is that I was leading after the first round, and I had played the first round in 2 hours and 45 minutes being first off and was leading the Masters. Well, the second day, they paired according to score back then. I was last off, and it took us longer than that to play the front nine. So I'd kind of been – I like to play fast. I was lulled to sleep a little bit almost, and when I missed the putt, the backhand at nine, it woke me up. and I missed a six-footer for birdie at 10 and shot 31 in the back and got me back in the tournament. So if anything, that backhand at Augusta probably got me back in the tournament because it ticked me off enough that I got back and did what I was capable of doing.
Speaking of backhands, there's no ever backhanded compliments from Lanny Watkins. He shoots it straight. He's right at you. He tells you how you feel. That's what makes you the top analyst on TV and golf, and we are so glad to have you by my side on Golf Channel for the Champions Tour. Lanny, we appreciate a couple minutes here joining us on the PapaCast. Great stuff. I can't wait to get started with you in January when we get things going in Hualalai on the Champions Tour for 2016.
Thank you, Bob.
World Golf Hall of Famer Lanny Watkins joining us here on PapaCast.